Welcome to The Millennial Wave. This is Rachel Kayleen, entrepreneur and millennial leader. If you aren't familiar with The Millennial Wave, our mission is to be a voice for the millennial generation. So we're constantly collaborating with new guests to help give our audience the guidance and raw knowledge needed to spark ideas and accomplish their goals. Again, if you've been here before, welcome back. If you're new here, thank you for coming on. And if you do get value, all we ask is that you give us a rating and a review to be able to share with us how much you enjoy listening to this podcast. All right, guys, so let's hop into it. Hey guys, what's going on? Welcome back to the Millennial Wave. I'm Rachel Kayleen and this is episode 43. And I'm super excited for this episode because I have Ryan Breedwell in here with me. He is the VP of a financial firm out here in Sacramento called Capital Planning Group. Mm-hmm. It is a huge company. And, you know, I've been trying to say this over and over and over again. Practice what I'm about to say for the last like 5 minutes.
I'm going to hear it right now. I know you're going to knock it out of the park.
But it's exciting because having people on this podcast, especially people that run huge companies in everyone's eyes, I mean, like I said, it's one of the most recognized companies for finances in the United States and probably all over, right?
Yeah, we in 2017, we got recognized as one of the top 10 asset managers, independent asset managers in the United States. In 2018, our investment advisor was recognized as the number two. Not for anything besides just, hey, you're doing a really good job. You have good client growth. Your company's ran very well. So just kind of that basic thing. I don't know if we'll make top 10 every single year, but it's obviously a goal.
Yeah. I mean, you guys have been in Inc. 5000.
We did make the Inc. 5000.
And Forbes.
Like, yeah. Forbes, they've mentioned, I know that I think we were like 676th on the Inc. 5000.
That's crazy.
For company growth year over year.
Yeah.
And then we also, one of our managers, Cabana Asset Manager, Asset Management, they picked up the number one artificial intelligence usage out of the state of Arkansas. So I don't know how many firms are out of Arkansas, but Arkansas also recognized. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
See, that's what I'm saying. There's tens of thousands of businesses, mm-hmm. and you guys are like 686?
676.
676.
Yep.
Excuse me.
Yep.
That's nuts.
Yeah, but I mean... You know, fingers crossed we can maintain that. Everybody kind of gets their time. Our biggest thing that we go for is 31 years in existence, thousands of clients. We have never had a complaint filed against us, which is
ever.
Really, really, really hard to do in the financial services industry.
Okay. So before I ask my first question.
Yes.
Thank you for being on the podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate you.
Of course. Absolutely. So first question is, if you guys have never had a complaint filed against you, how have you guys prevented something like that for all these years? What are your main like company values? Like what do you guys strive for?
So Glassdoor approach, that's in our transparency guide. So if I'm doing planning with somebody or I'm consulting with a company or I'm selling somebody a commissionable product, they know how much money I'm making. So a lot of my clients know how much money I make because I tell them right up front, hey, if we do this transaction, I'm going to be compensated in one of two ways. If we do this plan, it's this way. If we do this plan this way, over a 10-year period, this is how much money I'll make. Mm-hmm. If we make these average returns or this is a commissionable product, I'm going to make this much money up front. It's not to say that we haven't had people that have been upset because we're not perfect and mm-hmm. we have made small mistakes. But it's what you do to reconcile that. Mm-hmm. And so just being a human being, I mean, honestly, doing asset management, a lot of people hold you up on a pedestal because it's a topic that's not really gone over in school or anything like that. So a lot of people are weary of talking about taxes, death, and finances. Mm-hmm. So just bringing it down, toes on the ground. Hey, I understand that we did XYZ and you wanted ABC. What can we do to make it better? And normally that person will just let you know. We have legal things called rights of rescission. So, hey, we did this investment. You may have misunderstood it, and you lost $1,000. And how about we just write you a check for $1,000? Does that make everything okay? And they say, oh, yeah, okay, absolutely. And a lot of firms do that.
They do.
Yeah, it's called rights of rescission. It's a legal kind of umbrella put on that most advisors will offer to their clients. Mm. And it's just a buffer that, hey, before you go file a complaint against me, please give me the opportunity to make something right. I've never had it happen while I've been at the firm. Mm-hmm. I think it may have happened once or twice in the whole history. But as far as, you know, that squashed it. It was just somebody saying, hey, I may have misunderstood something. I just really want to make this right. And we said, oh, absolutely. If you misunderstood something, we want to make it right.
Yeah.
And we just go and do that. So just doing business the way you would do it with your friends and family. It's really not overly complicated. But I think people try firms, make things overly complicated because they run their business like a business, not like a family-owned business. And mm-hmm. they have so many clients that they just become numbers. And yeah. then, you know, most of my clients have my cell phone. I got like 800 or 900 emails from multiple clients. Just happy Thanksgiving. Hope wow. my wife are doing good. So just having a relationship with them to where they're comfortable telling you their feelings. Because what most of the time happens is they won't tell you and yeah. they're mad.
Mm-hmm.
And then it hits that breaking point and there's no turning back from there. They're just yeah. going to go and try to make themselves feel better. Complain, yada, yada, yada. So that's kind of our secret sauce is full transparency, letting people know what's going on up front. And before we make any decisions, we re-go over, hey, mm-hmm. here's the cost. Are you sure you're okay with that? Awesome. Let's make your plan.
Love it. So you have all these clients. How are you even able to manage that many? Like if you have that many people contacting you and reaching out, because I feel like when people are building businesses and it gets really, really big and they want to keep that personable approach and mm-hmm. the transparency there and not make people just a number. How do you do that when you guys are so large?
I think because of the process we have up front, people really understand A, what they're doing, or to a degree that makes them comfortable, and B, where their money is going. We have client portals that send out weekly reports to all of our clients and let them know everything that's going on in all their accounts versus just monthly or quarterly mm-hmm. statements, which is what a lot of people get. Mm-hmm. So we do weekly, monthly, quarterly, and biannual reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing that, everybody is really kept in the know on what's going on. So market volatility doesn't affect our firm as much as it does other firms. Because what you tend to have is if, let's say I hadn't told you what was going on with your money for 3 months, and you turn on the news and you see headline news that the market is tanking,
mm-hmm.
you may get emotional and freak out. Versus, let's call that out, that was on a Monday. Well, this same Monday, you're my client. Oh, the market's tanking, but I just made 3% last week in my portfolio. And the market's down 1%. That means I still am up 2%.
Mm-hmm.
So it just, when you don't know, it makes you nervous when you get headline shocker news. So
yeah.
that's kind of really, for asset managers, there was a study done, why clients leave. And it is not because of poor performance most of the time. Mm-hmm. 3 out of 4 times they leave because their advisor doesn't talk to them. Or when their advisor does talk to them, he's trying to sell them, he or she is trying to sell them something.
Mm-hmm.
So sending out handwritten cards, going to all my clients' businesses, talking to them directly, being available to talk weekends when I'm on vacation, via text, via email, via phone call, via FaceTime, having that level available to them, I feel like they don't use it. I don't know why, but they say, oh, well, I have all this up front. I'm good. I'm going to mm-hmm. receive my weekly reports, and if I need something, I'll reach out to Ryan. I have a wonderful staff. I have a wonderful back office staff in multiple states that helps me. And if anything gets escalated to the point that I need to get involved, I'm let know that I need to get involved
mm-hmm.
and we handle it. But I mean, it's just a well-oiled machine. I really think the secret though is that weekly report to our clients so they know what's going on with their accounts. That
yeah.
has been the biggest difference maker over the past 2 years that we implemented. That has really helped mm-hmm. kind of spend less of my time on service, which is not something I mind.
Mm-hmm.
I do not mind servicing my clients. But if I can have something that automates and gives the same...
I was just going to say that.
Yeah, because as you know, time is an asset and you cannot ever get it back.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can spend my time growing the business and I'm at the same time have an automated system still feeding my clients the information that they need and they're happy with that,
mm-hmm.
that frees me up to then spend time with my family, spend time with my friends, and still have a really good and robust work relationship with all my employees.
Yeah.
So I think that's our secret.
Yeah. And one of the things that I was also going to say is you want to spend your time automating it or more so growing the business. So when someone is growing the business? You already have a ton of clients. How do you go about growing the business, especially a business like that? Is it acquiring more clients? Is it doing more locations? Like, what exactly is growing it in your eyes, and how would someone that's already large scale beyond that?
So early on, normally what you're doing is you're trying to meet a ton of people. So we've gone to networking events together, Mix, sometimes for Trevor Fong's event. Mm-hmm. If you go to Network After Dark, when I first got into my career, I was going out to all those events, making my face known. Hey, this is who I am. This is what I do. And then you'll get a very large, it's kind of a shotgun approach. You're touching everybody, and then you're going back through and seeing who is going mm-hmm. to, you can pinpoint and actually help. Mm-hmm. Through that, if you do really good at your job, yours, mine, you should get referrals. People yeah. should talk about you. Mm-hmm. And so most of my business has grown through referral base. Mm-hmm. Once you get to the level that we're at, some of the things we do about 24 workshops a year for retirees to go over Social Security at a library. So we're not buying them a steak and selling them a mutual fund or trying to sell them an annuity. We are really holding it at a library because we're not allowed to sell stuff at a library. Mm-hmm. So it's a public service to educate people.
Love it.
People very much appreciate that. And we have a form there saying, we're a finance firm. If you would like to make an appointment with us, go ahead and sign right here and we'll give you a phone call. Mm-hmm. And almost 7 out of 10 people that come will do that because we're not selling something to them. We're purely providing value. Mm-hmm. And I really believe that if you provide value to people up front at no cost and no obligation, like I believe we do, people will find that very palpable and they will then say, I may want to explore this a little bit more. What's going on over here? Is the grass yeah. greener really if I cut it? So that's my thing. And then always, I'm a risk taker as far as not with my clients' money unless they ask me to be, mm-hmm. but as far as with relationships, I will go out of my way to meet somebody that maybe is out of my league. You know, I'm 27 years old. Maybe I want to go try to get in the same room with Michael Bloomberg. I don't know. Some weird stuff like yeah. that. But not being afraid to go talk to the heavy hitters in the industry and really grow your base that way.
I have a question.
Yes.
So like talking to heavy hitters, have you ever had anyone, I don't want to say laugh you out of the room, but have you ever had anyone like insult your intelligence yeah. or like, you
yeah.
know,
actually,
I want to know. I'm sorry. Yeah, I've had it happen to me and I'm just like,
I won't say the person's name because yeah. he's in Sacramento.
Okay.
But I have a really good buddy. He's probably going to listen to this and crack up because he knows the story. I was down at Park, excuse me, I'm going to drink a water.
Okay, this is going to be a good one.
I was down at Park, and it was just a regular night. Had a drink or two, and I saw this pretty famous broker, commercial real estate broker in Sacramento. And I just walked up to introduce myself to him because I know who he is. I recognized mm-hmm. him, and I said, oh, I want to meet this person. Mm-hmm. So I walked up, and I said, hey, XYZ, I'm Ryan Breedwell. I own a finance firm in Sacramento, heard a lot about you, see you everywhere, just wanted to pick your brain, da, da, da. As I'm talking to him, he had me put out my hand, and he...
He literally said, put out your hand, or
he
what?
He was like, put your hand out, and I was like,
okay. Was he by himself?
No, he was okay. at a table.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah.
You just went up to the whole table?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, you're yeah. a beast.
I'm
okay.
a beast, man.
Yeah.
And he put a Ferrari key in my hand and said, this is the last time you'll ever touch this, like a Ferrari key. And then I was like, okay. And then I just gave it back to him and then I left. So that's probably the most awkward and then the most like flex that's ever been done on me. I had some guy.
What?
Yeah.
He literally did that?
Yeah.
This is the last time you'll ever touch this? Like you're not capable of.
Yeah. Yeah. Benefit is, you know, as time has gone by, that individual's embroiled in a lawsuit right now for doing things not right business-wise. So things, what goes around comes around.
Yeah.
And then a couple of years back, I was at a networking event in Natomas, and I had some real estate agent who thought he was, you know, something hot, and he was like flexing up on me, trying to get me to show him my bank account. And I was like, dude,
what?
Who are you?
That's so nuts.
I know. So you,
that's ego.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, there's a lot of people that like me and a lot of people that don't like me. You're going to get that when you're yourself.
What's that one quote? It's like, I'd rather be loved or hated, but never tolerated.
Yes. And I am, my wife will tell you, there's two types of people. People that love me and people that hate me.
Yeah.
But my dad also told me, if nobody's hating, you're not doing anything right.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
smart man.
Yeah, he was. He's a super cool dude.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the, those are the probably the two most awkward times.
Show me your bank account.
Yeah.
You know what's so funny? I've had someone do that to me too.
Isn't that weird?
No, it's like more like how much you make, and then you like, you basically, it's like one of those people that are very aggressive about like getting answers, and if you, and you almost feel like if you don't give them like the answer right there, you're like, I don't know, it's more like a, whose balls are bigger.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, I don't really understand or come from that.
Yeah.
You know, don't get me wrong. When I'm with the guys, you know, we'll have, we joke around and guys talk like guys and stuff like that. But when you're in a professional setting,
yeah,
not acting professional is just, it becomes the elephant in the room. Mm-hmm. And then you just become the social awkward person. Nobody wants to talk to you. Then you get that rep on your name. There's just, it's a waste of your time, a waste of your energy, in
yeah,
my 100%.
Opinion.
You could just be, instead of trying to be better than that person, maybe you can ask that person how they could help you, how you two could collaborate to make each other more successful. Mm-hmm. Hey, I'm doing this. It's working really well for me. What are you doing? Oh, that's really cool. If I integrated this with you and you integrated this with me, maybe we could do something together and I can make money and you can make money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the, with the expanse of social media, you have a lot of people that are just clout chasers.
Mm-hmm.
They just want the clout, and I don't know why, but a lot of people do.
Yeah.
It's nothing wrong to get recognition for things that you do well. Like the awards we get for our firm, I have no problem telling people that because we worked really hard and did a lot of hard work to get those. But dropping a Ferrari key in my hand and telling me I'm never going to touch a Ferrari because that makes you feel big, I don't know. I don't really come from that area. That is foreign to me.
Yeah, 100%. That's crazy. Yeah. I don't know what. I don't know. Anyway, that's something else. Okay, that's, I haven't had that, but that's still pretty.
Yeah, that's
a dick.
That's like ego level 1,000.
Yeah, no, literally. They would have scored 100 on a personality test about like ego.
Correct.
Sorry, I just took a personality test yesterday and I like was checking my scores and I was like, oh shit, like I'm kind of over the limit. That's not good.
Yeah, mine, was it like the one that shows like the graph, like where you fall on and stuff
no,
like that?
No, there was three categories. There's ego and slash confidence.
Hmm.
Ego slash confidence. Trickiness or sneakiness slash cunning. And then the last one was courage slash ruthlessness. And on the ego and confidence,
I bet you I could guess what you were.
Guess.
You probably were confident.
Wait, hold on. So the higher you are, it's the worse it is. So it's,
so you were probably,
the scores are 1 to 100. And there's the main things are just confidence, sneakiness, and then ruthlessness. So those are like the main ones, right? So if you're over 40 in anything, it's not necessarily good. You might have psychological problems.
Oh.
Yeah. So wow. Go ahead, guess.
I would say that you're like a confident, what was the opposite of sneaky?
Cunning. Well, yeah, sneaky slash cunning. Like they're okay. The same category, ego slash
confidence. Oh, so they're all the same bucket.
Yes.
Okay, so I would say that you would score not over, I don't think you would score over in anything. I may score over sometime in the confidence arena.
A lot of guys do.
Yeah, it's
a
just
lot
how
of
guys
do.
Are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And being able to admit that is a very big thing too.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'd probably maybe in the cunning or slyness, I don't know if it'd be a negative. I don't want to say it's a negative, but you may score higher in that than any of the other categories. But I think your confidence is going to be solid. And then what was the last category?
Ruthlessness. That's like murder right
yeah,
there.
I don't like think you, I think you would score high enough to where you're like not ruthless, but you know what you want.
Yeah.
But now you're going to, okay,
okay,
so, now those
so let
are
me
my,
tell
yeah.
you, okay, I literally, they said if you're over 40, that's not good, but it depends because there was this one girl that I guess scored 100 on like, on all of them or something like that. And the person was like, what did you do? Kill somebody? And she was like,
no,
like she literally killed somebody. So that's why she scored so high, but it was a certain case, like she was being bullied and then she fought back and she hit somebody with a pipe and then they died. But that's another story. Okay. Long story short. Okay. But for my mine, I scored a 64 on confidence.
64?
But I answered honestly, though. But the reason why is because I answered like, oh, like, do you believe that you are going to create success. Like there was either like, I hope I create success, and then I know I'm going to create success. And I was like, I know I'm going to create success.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? It's like things like that. And I was like, I'm a 64. What? You know, I'm like, oh, but there is times where I've let my ego get in the way. There's times where I've been, felt like I was entitled. There's times where I've, you know, like we've all been there. And it's like, if I try to give myself the best answers on this quiz, then I'm just going to be, you know, I'm going to be trying to act like that great person that answers everything right. I'm like, no, let me be honest, because I'm just with myself right now. But now I'm telling everyone else. But everything else was lower.
You know, and I think that may be slightly subjective too, because, you know, us serial entrepreneurs, you and I, we, you know, wake up every single day unemployed. We're out to make our kill every single day. We're hunters and not gatherers. We got to go find our way to make money. And that's nice because, you know, we have no limit. Nobody's telling us how much money we can or can't make. We have flexibility on our time. But we have to condition ourselves to think that way, because if we don't think that way, the person next to us that is thinking that way, it's just going to skyrocket past us.
Yeah.
So I would say that that test is probably a little subjective on the 40 number.
Yeah.
Because I think if you're not cocky, an extreme level of confidence shouldn't be seen as a negative. Because especially as a woman, which is, I would say, less rare than a man, I think you would, I would agree. Guys are just upfront. I would say more so cocky and confident combo. But if you're a strong, confident woman, that's a hard skill set to come by in today's day and age. And you have that probably because you're a businesswoman. You're out here making your own thing. You're out here making your own brand. You have to wake up every day. I know I'm going to be confident. Because the second that you don't think that, it's going to come through in your day-to-day.
Yeah.
So I would probably score pretty high on that then, because I would be like, I know. I am. I will. That's how I would do. Because I tell myself that every day.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm making those goals.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like you look at it and then you're more like, okay, well, you know, if there's things that I know that I may, that I know I'm doing right, and then there's things that I know I could work on, which is funny. I had this talk with myself like a week ago, and I was like, you know, I need to work on a couple things. I need to make sure that, because I feel like if sometimes you feel like you may get screwed over by somebody, like in a business relationship, or just somebody that you're kind of getting to know that's an associate, but you're building a friendship, and then you want to like trust the person and whatever. Like, I feel like situations in life, they'll really test your, how ethical you are, and if you really do trust people, because there's times where you're in moments where it's like, okay, I can either trust this person and I can, you know, everything will work out, or I can trust this person and they'll screw me over. And it's one of those things where you can't be like, oh, well, I don't want them to screw me over, so I'm going to like just pull out type of thing. I don't know how to explain it, but
no, that's so real, like to my job. Cause imagine, let's say I'm doing like a retiree's, I'm doing the retirement income plan. They're going to show me all these buckets of money, and they represent their entire life savings. I've worked my whole life. This is what I have saved total. I have 300, 400, 1 million, 2 million, whatever it may be. And it doesn't matter how much it is, because to that person, that is their, that's their nut. That is their nest egg. They have to hang their hat, just like everybody does eventually, on a professional that knows more than they know. And they have to trust that person. So me building trust and rapport with, let's say, you as my client, if I'm doing your retirement plan, is a huge deal. Because if you do not trust me and something does go awry, what will you do? You will pull out. You'll stop doing your investment. You'll go awry off our plan. And that's just because you haven't built the trust and confidence in that person. Versus if we have some expectation, hey, we're going to lose some money sometimes. It's okay to say that. Making quantifiable expectations. Hey, I'm gonna set 10 podcast appointments, and some idiot's going to get sick on a Saturday morning and then text me. That was me like 3 weeks ago. And, you know, I can't do anything about that, but I'm going to make the best of my day. So, you know, you're 100% right with knowing that that is a huge, huge, huge deal to do up front. And so real in my industry, I have to earn people's trust and continuously reinforce that trusting me is a good idea. And then I have to quantify why it is. So, hey, I can't overpromise and underdeliver. I would rather underpromise and overdeliver. And so a lot of the times, some of my plans don't look as sexy as other people's plans, but I'm purposely backing everything down so that when I go see them, and if it's above that, and where it likely will be, I'm now the king of the castle. I'm now the best guy ever. I just had a review with a client, and they were like, you know, how much do you think we can make? This is last December. We were talking to them. I took, it was like $800,000 of their retirement savings, and they said, how much do you think you can make us if we withdraw, you know, $40,000 over the next year? And I said, probably around 8% after fees. When I went and met with them, we made 11.1% after fees.
Wow.
So, you know, walking in, first thing I get, big hug. Here's a gift card for you and your wife for dinner. How's everything going? We wanted you to meet our son.
Oh my gosh.
So you get that expectation.
Yeah.
Versus I have seen the opposite when I was shadowing another advisor, where you're selling performance. Hey, we're going to make 11% per year. No problem. Sounds really good. Then you make 9. That's not a bad return, but that person's going to be pissed because you sold them a bag of goods.
Yeah.
So building that trust with people can have a super direct effect on you. After I left that meeting with that person who I have now had for a client for a year and they really trust me, their son, who is extremely successful, is now going to have a meeting with me because he sees what I've done for his parents and thinks that maybe what he's doing with his current advisor might not be in line with what he wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
Trust. He doesn't trust that advisor. He verbatim said, I gave that guy my money 5 years ago. I've never heard from him since. So again, one of the main reasons people leave is lack of communication, which builds on lack of trust. If I'm talking to you all the time, hey, we lost 4% this week, next week, hey, we lost 3%. It ain't good news, but I'm here when it's good and it's bad. So that's a big, big, big deal. So you're really hitting the nail on the head there.
Yeah. And, you know, I have a question, too, because clearly, like some of the people that we were talking about, some of your clients before this, you have a lot of successful clients.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So do they come in kind of educated about investments ahead of time? Because you can sometimes, like, people that have created success, you know, and they have made a lot of money, they mostly know about the money that they're making and, you know, where they want to put it. But do they come in, do you ever have anyone that's like super successful and they're like, I have no idea what I'm doing?
Yeah, most of them actually do that.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of them know. So most of my clients are high net worth or ultra high net worth. So they have 20 million in assets or more. That being said, yeah, $1,000, Ryan Breville Capital Planning Group, we can talk.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing I ask the people is, how much money do you have? What kind of assets do you have? Oh, I have 3 rental properties. I have this IRA. I have this IRA. I have this brokerage. I have this life insurance policy. Great. Where's your money invested? Oh, I have no idea. 9 times out of 10. Oh, I don't know. Okay. What are you paying in fees? 9 times out of 10, I hear this. 1.15.
Is that good?
Well, that's normally what advisors will charge their client. 1 to 1.15%. And so I say, so that's what you're paying your advisor, but what's your total account fees? And they will come back at me and say, well, I was told it was 1.15%. And I know for a fact it's not because it's I'll know the firm. So I'll know for an investment advisor, a federally registered investment advisor, which we are, you have to publish what's called a form ADV and a brochure part 2. It has all your fees on it. It's public information. You have to state how much you charge people per the assets they have under management, less the advisor fee. So this client that I'm referring to, 1.15, I have $3 million, great. I'm under the impression that you're paying more than 1.15%, but instead of me telling it to you and your advisor telling you that you're not, how about I go ahead and send a report off to the CFA Institute? They're out of Texas, and I'll have them do a report on your portfolio at no cost, no charge, no obligation, and I'll show you exactly to the penny how much you're paying in fees, and then we can show you all the commissions and all this other stuff on your portfolio. How would that sound to you? We'll do a scan on their portfolio. They're paying 2.7%. So then that person's like, I'm paying 2.7%. I thought I was paying 1.15. Mm-hmm. Well, you are to your advisor.
Yeah.
The difference on that is going to, you know, the fund, administrative costs, 12B1 fee, yada, yada, yada. So most of my clients do not know what they're invested in when they come to me. If they're not my client, my clients know what they're invested in, how much they're paying in fees. And then if they're paying those fees, what type of fees are they paying? Is it a 12B1 fee, a fee that is getting charged to me so that my firm can advertise and get new clients? Is it a loaded Is it a commissionable security? When I give my investment advisor or my broker a dollar, only 95 cents gets invested, and he puts 5 cents on every dollar in his pocket. Or is it an assets under management fee, or is it an expense ratio? There's so many fees that go into a portfolio, and most advisors will just say, you're paying me 1.15%, never go on to the conversation. When I talk to my clients, we just say, your total account fees, and generally our clients' total account fees are between 1.5 and 1.7%. That's me getting paid, that's the firm charging you for technology, that's the funds getting paid, and that's everything in between. There's not a penny more than that. So I can tell you, if we made no money, I can just multiply your account by 1.7%. This is how much money you'll get charged over a year. It's going to be deducted every single month. On your statement, it'll say monthly management fee in parentheses. That's the fee going to my firm. I don't make all that money, but I make about half of that. And the other half goes to pay my staff, goes to pay the funds, goes to pay for the technology, all the reports, so on and so forth. Mm. So that is the number one wedge driver that I normally have right up front, is people have no idea where their money is invested and no idea how much they're paying in fees. Mm-hmm. And so I will provide that information for no cost and no obligation, and then let them make an informed decision. When you give people the tools to make a decision for themselves, they generally are going to go on the route that they feel is most preferential for them.
Yeah.
When me and you are buying our cars, we went with the best terms that was presented to us.
Yeah.
We obviously knew there were other terms out there, but we went with the best terms that was presented to us. A client will do the exact same thing with their money. So if you give them the information up front and you let them know and you give them options and you're not thirsty for their business, mm-hmm. meaning you're really providing value, most of the time you will get those clients to move from their current asset manager to yourself. Not all the time. It doesn't happen all the time. Sometimes they just say, oh, thank you, have a nice day, and those people leave and I think they're crazy, but it's their right to do what they want with their money. Mm-hmm. But providing that value up front is really what separates us, again, from our competitors. Mm-hmm. And then just keeping in contact, like I said, weekly. Remember those weekly reports? No, not really many people do that, because a lot of the times you're going to see a lot of volatility if you do that. There's going to be a lot more negative reports than if you just send four reports a year. Those could all four be very positive versus 50 plus reports a year, there's going to be a lot more chances for negatives. Mm-hmm. So, but that level of transparency and then providing the fee and all that stuff up front.
Yeah. And one of the things that we also mentioned when we were first getting started with the podcast was how you didn't even know that you were going to go this route with finances. So how did that even come about? Because everything that you're talking about, obviously you know exactly what you're talking about and it sounds like you really enjoy it. Mm-hmm. So how did this, what did you originally want to do? Like what...
I played baseball out of college. I was going to Sonoma State. I picked up marketing as my degree. And I really didn't understand beyond that we had a great lifestyle and everything was good. In my mind, you went to college, you got a degree, you graduated, you got a killer job, and you were making money. That's not the reality of the situation. So what happened was I got this, you know, I'm going through getting my degrees. I got to start making money. I go get my first job. I was at a car dealership in Corte Madera helping with the finance, which is like the loans, mm-hmm. and then doing sales. I worked my butt off 6 days a week. Most of it was weekends. I would have like a Wednesday or a Monday off, so like the worst day off ever to have. I was driving 85 miles one way to go to work, and I made like 55 grand. Gross. Like, that's before taxes and stuff. Mm. And then I owed money on taxes. It was just a grind to, like, barely make it. Yeah. And then my dad had this offer, like, hey, I'm not going to write you any paychecks up front, but, like, you have an opportunity to be an executive at the company and an opportunity to make really good money for yourself. And pretty much after that first year, I was like, okay, I can smell the coffee. I probably need to go check out what this is. I obviously had a background in growing up around finance. I studied finance in college. So got my licensing. Got it all done in the end of October of 2015. And I started full-time at the firm in January of 2016. I haven't looked back since. And that's... Wow. That... It was hard to do that because I felt like I was having a handout from my dad. But I pinky promise you, he gave me an office, a desk, and a phone, and then said, good luck. I didn't have my first paycheck. I didn't make any money for like 6 months. So like June 2016 was like my first amount of money I made. I was living off of savings until then. But once I figured out how to do that, my first year I made around almost $100,000 in 6 months. So I was like, okay. So now that nobody's capping my income and my time is valued, I can really deploy my time and make something of myself. And I'm the only one that's going to hold me back. That really works well with my personality. So that's how I decided right then and there, like, A, I was good at it, and B, I doubled my income in half the amount of time. Okay, this is what my dad was right. Hard to say, but Pops, you were right.
Yeah.
I need to probably come join the family firm. And that's what I did. And now I have a guy that works with me. He makes phone calls for us. We have staff that helps us out. And I all started from just me. And now we're kind of this big thing. And
oh, really?
Yeah.
So how was it before?
I did everything myself. I had no assistant.
Like, how was the firm before?
A lot smaller. We were big. Right before 2008, we had a lot of agents. And then 2008 happened. And a lot of guys could not sustain being in the financial services industry because they were more transactional. And so they had to quit. So we went from a firm of 18 or 19 advisors under my dad down to like 5. Then eventually those guys kind of retired out and I came on. And now today, as far as advisors go, it's my dad, it's me, and we have one lady that works out in Foster City. And that's it.
Really?
So it's 3 really main advisors.
That's it.
That's it. So
no other ones? Mm-mm. You guys don't bring anyone on?
No.
What?
Yeah. So I know, that's why I was telling you, I have a very personal approach. If one of my clients calls me, I have their name and number saved. I will, bing, I know exactly what they have. I know exactly what they're doing. I know all their accounts. I may not know the balances that day, but I have met that client. I've looked that person in the white of their eye. I've shook their hand. I've shared the air with them. I know what they're doing. They like that. They really like that. They like that they can call the vice president and talk to them. They like that they can call my dad and talk directly to him. They like that when I'm in Jamaica, I will pick up my phone, walk out of a dinner, and talk to them. Because half the reason I'm in Jamaica is because I'm making money by making them money. So it's a service is a big deal, but also personal service is a huge deal where you feel like, you know, you have a restaurant you like to go to in Sacramento that you're known, or a place that you're a regular at, maybe down in Vegas.
Yeah.
That they know you. It's special. Oh,
maybe.
Or you don't have to.
Yeah.
You know,
Starbucks.
Okay, so I'm always in maybe Starbucks. You have a barista that knows you. Yeah. And just for the fact that they mention your name, maybe they know your order, that little bitty thing is such a huge deal. I go to Temple Coffee on K Street quite often. When I walked in there this morning, Honduras, pour over. Is that all you want? Yeah. Oh, great. And do you want your normal scone? Yep. Want my scone. So as little as that is, those little golden nuggets, those make a big difference to people.
Yeah.
Because not a lot of people do that anymore.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. That's incredible. So if there's only 3 of you and you guys can want to continue to grow, what are you going to do once it gets bigger? Are you going to bring on some more people? Or is that why you're so cautious about bringing on new people? Because you feel like you might lose that personable touch?
I think if the time ever called for it, we would definitely hire more advisors. Right now, I don't need to. Still, you know, still working 7-8 hours every single day. Like, work 2 hours of, like, paperwork. And I'm not overwhelmed. If it ever gets to the point where I feel like I'm overwhelmed, I may hire an assistant, but I don't know if I'd ever let, anybody else grab the steering wheel. Maybe just change the oil and put the gas and change the tires, but never the steering wheel. Because where my dad has taken it, it was already really hard for him to give me a portion of the steering wheel, and where I'm planning on taking it, it's probably going to be very hard for me to pass that on. So I don't know if that'll happen in the near term or long term. Obviously, if we got so big to where we needed to, that we'd be doing our clients a disservice by not having the support staff there.
Yeah.
We do have support staff in Scottsdale, Arizona, Plano, Texas, and Fayetteville, Arkansas. So I do have those people. It's around 40 or 50 people.
Jeez.
But as far as advisors go,
yeah,
the people that are giving advice, building the plans, I mean, I build all my plans personally for my clients. My dad builds all the plans personally for his clients. And Erica, who's out in San Francisco, builds all the plans personally for her clients. That's a personalized approach. If you go look at all the top advisors published in the United States, most of them run their practice that way. They want to have their hands on, because when you're a hands-off approach, laissez-faire, things get out of control too fast. Whether I have my hand on the, you know, shift knob, steering wheel, brake, and gas, fully in control and in the know of what's going on, I can make decisions in real time to effectively make changes that are going to mitigate loss or mitigate a negative effect or proactively make a positive effect.
Yeah.
So I just prefer to have a big impact with a small firm approach. And a lot of people, and then I don't want to lose the fact that we are family owned. I don't want to dilute that.
And before you actually came on board, did you care as much about it being a family owned business?
No, I didn't.
Until you actually got in there and saw.
Once I started being directly affected by it, and it wasn't just my dad running the business, it was now me and my dad, it means a lot more. When you get the recognition or you don't get the recognition, or when something goes right or something goes wrong. It's almost like if the firm did bad, I would feel like I was watching my child drown. It's that important to me.
Yeah.
So with that said, you probably have something like this podcast or I think you're looking at a spot out in Vegas or something. That's anything important to you. You don't want anybody to impose on that or to cause you strife in that way.
Yeah.
And if you can have control on the situation, you would totally take that rather than being like, I'll just take what comes at me and fly by the seat of my pants.
Yeah. Well, what about regarding, because you know what what they say sometimes about having too much control or not being able to give certain things up or not knowing when to let someone else take over. What do you do about situations like that? Because like you said, you want to be in control. But what about, like, if you're in control, you won't be able to get as much help. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think I'm in a unique situation with my industry where it's actually a positive to be in control, because my clients don't want somebody that is not in control of what's going on with their money. Outside of that, I will tell you this. I'm the head of my house, and my wife is the neck that turns the head. So it's a 50-50 split at the house.
Yeah.
It more like 60-40. We really...
60 who?
You know who. Okay. I'm just at work. Work specifically. Compartmentalized in work. I feel like being in control, and not a control freak, but in control of the outcome, or I'm turning the wheel to make the outcome. So if there's anybody to blame, I want to blame me. Mm-hmm. That's really what it comes down to. I don't want to be a finger pointer. A thumb pointer is what a real leader is. Your thumbs in. If you point fingers out at somebody, you got to remember you got three coming back at you. So no finger pointing. It really allows me to know that if a mistake is made, it is my fault.
Yeah.
Therefore, I need to figure out. I don't ever want it to be somebody else made a decision that somehow affected me up here. It needs to be, if I make a decision, it either needs to work or it needs to not work. And if it doesn't work, I am the only one responsible to that.
Yeah.
It does, you are touching on something though, because as you can imagine, if I'm making those decisions, sometimes it is a stressful thing. And my wife would tell you that sometimes I do get overwhelmed sometimes with having to make big decisions, but I think that just comes with the territory with anything. Any executive at any company has to do that. And if you're not ready to do that, and you're not ready to do the hard thing, be in the growth zone where it's uncomfortable sometimes, then you may not just be cut out to be an executive and maybe you need to work for somebody. Yeah. But I don't work for anybody. I own the company. So I think that just in work is a healthy thing to do specifically for my industry. Not maybe for all industries, but I think my clients would feel weary if I wasn't in control of what was going on with the money, because they want to know that when they give me their money that I am doing what I say I'm going to do. I'm not like I just like loose hands and letting it fly.
Yeah. And now that you've been involved in the business for almost 4 years, right? Because mm-hmm. started in 2016, January 1st.
Yeah, actually, I've hit my 5th year in November, so I'm in my 5th year
okay.
now.
Oh, okay. 5th year. Okay, got it. So, since you've been doing this for that long, what are some of the key things that you've learned in business that have really helped you that you didn't know that you needed to, like skill sets that you didn't know that you needed to acquire, things that have really helped you that you think could help anyone in any industry, like universal principles?
Yeah. I'm not a big reader, but I really do think that taking the time to peel back 15 to 20 pages of a book of somebody that is in your world that you respect, that's a big, big, big thing that I've been doing just this year. I started picking up some books again and reading. That's made a huge impact on how my day-to-day runs, because it's sobering sometimes when it's just you in your head and you're reading those words and you're just talking to yourself. It's almost therapeutic. So I think reading is a very good thing. I'm not saying you have to read 20 or 30 books a year. You don't have to Bill Gates it. But picking up and just doing 15, 20 pages a day, maybe as a journal or just a self-growth, that's a very big thing I've started doing this year. Writing down my goals has been a huge success for myself. I've been doing that for the past 2 years. Every January, I write down what I want to do in December. Every July, I see what I've done for the past 6 months, and I either up or keep my goal the same. And then trying to, at least when you're a self-employed individual, consistently give yourself a raise every single year. If you're always looking to give yourself a raise, you're always going to be hustling. So I've had those kind of three mentalities baked into my success. Kind of the third is the one I've been doing the longest. The second is the one I've been doing the second longest. And the first one that I mentioned to you, the books, that's kind of the one that I've picked up more recently. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I think is really good is maybe surrounding yourself by people who not only talk the talk, but are walking the walk and have walked the walk. So people that you can actually consider a mentor, you can actually ask questions to, and it may not be 100% the answer you need or looking for, but it's applicable to your day-to-day. So for me, seasoned advisors across the United States, Pete DeRula out in the Carolinas, flying down in a couple weeks to Newport Beach to go listen to a conference at the world's largest bond manager, PIMCO. It's dry stuff, guys, but these people are so much more successful than I am, and they're going to be talking about things that I need to know. Yeah. So just being a sponge.
Yeah.
Those real four things have been real helpful for me for the past to kind of keep building myself and be successful.
Definitely. So habits.
Habits, yep. Yep, and good habits, obviously, because that everybody has their vices and their bad habits. Mm-hmm. But good habits, and then maybe proactively improving on your good habits over time. Like picking up books again for me this year, that was something that I did, and then I stopped, and kind of had to Indian burn myself into the fact, like, hey, 15 pages, 20 minutes, just read for 20 minutes a day. And I'm reading a book right now called Safety First Retirement Planning by Wade Faw, and he's a PhD retirement income planning specialist. And just some of the stuff that he's saying in there, I know, but it's kind of in the back of my head. And to bring it back up to the front and just bring it to the light and talk about it in a really high level way, it's great. I mean, it really helped me actually on my last podcast that I did for the topic I was doing. It gave me a whole extra 5 minutes to talk about it, and I had a lot of listeners write in and say they really appreciated that. So
that's awesome.
By providing me value, I then got to leverage that and provide somebody else value.
Yeah, you can share it.
Yeah, and that's just so great. That's just it's very fulfilling when that happens.
Yeah, definitely. Love it. Well, I wish that we could talk all day.
Yeah, me too.
And by the way, you brought me champagne, he's literally the coolest guest ever.
Oh, like, thank you, guys.
Literally. So tell these people where they can find you.
Yeah, if you wanted to get in contact with me, you can always shoot me an email. Like I said, Ryan Breedwell, B as in boy, REEDWELL, at capital with an O, planninggroup.com. You can hit my handle on Instagram at rbreedwell. go ahead and shoot me a DM. I don't have a huge following, but I will get back to you. And I'll even be brave enough to tell you guys my cell phone. It's 707-372-2207.
You still got the 707, huh?
Still got the 707.
Okay.
You know.
707.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, Mac would be would not be happy if I got rid of it.
Right. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, feel free to reach out to me. Be happy to answer any questions that you guys have. And if you haven't already, subscribe to her podcast. Make sure that you go ahead and click below and subscribe to that podcast. Shameless plug here. But, you know, this is the type of stuff that you're going to get by listening to her, listening to people like me. You're going to expose yourself to new information and new people. And she's been a huge, she's been a positive influence in the little time that I've known her. So make sure you subscribe.
Thank you. And then last but not least, I always try to ask somebody this at the end.
Yeah.
You already mentioned that you're not bringing on any financial advisors and you already kind of put in your plugs. But what about like people that want to work with you, work for you, work around you, get mentorship, like whatever. And some of it may not be available, but one of the things I really like to provide is opportunities to people. So if somebody's listening to you and they're like, dang, like this guy's absolutely crushing it. Like I'd love to be able to be around him to, you know, learn from him. How can someone do that?
Yeah, simply reach out to me. 4 times a year. Next year I'll be bringing up a random set of people up to my cabin up in Truckee. We do wealth building and like exploratory, just camps. It can be men, women, whoever. Don't be afraid to reach out, and everything's on a case-by-case basis. I can't, you know, I can't save the world, but if I can help you and there's something I can provide value to you, please, all you have to do is reach out. Ball's in your court, throw it my way, and we'll see if we can play.
Love it. Awesome. All right. Thank you so much again for being on.
No worries. I appreciate you.
Of course.